Hello and welcome to episode 66 of the Oscar White Media Podcast, which is not going so well because my PC is being a dick tonight. We are joined this week by Editor-in-Chief of SixAxis.com and a Managing Director of Oscar White Media, Peter Chapman. Say hello, Peter.
Hello.
We're also joined this week by Editor-in-Chief over at the currently broken ScreenDemon.com, Lewis Gaston. Say hello, Lewis.
Hi.
Hopefully it'll probably be fixed by the time the podcast comes out, otherwise Peter will probably be a bit annoyed.
Fuck, I hope it'll fix by then.
So yeah,
it'll be fixed this evening.
So yeah, there was E3, so there's no news. Go listen to the E3 podcast we did, that has news in it. Part of the main news is Crystal Dynamics said they were going to rape Lara Croft, but then they actually didn't. And then also,
did you say Christian Dynamics?
Crystal Dynamics.
Oh.
And then also, what? Sony seems to be perpetually apologising and explaining E3.
Why? What did they do?
Did they
rape Lara Croft?
The problem was they didn't do anything. That was sort of the issue. Right. But yeah, so this week, strangely, although it was just E3, a lot of movie talk. First up, biggest movie at the minute, Prometheus. So, we've all seen it. Kev's not here because he's had some personal stuff to deal with, but that's fortunate because it means we can talk about it properly because he hasn't seen it yet. So,
and he's a stickler for spoilers.
He's a stickler. So,
we should probably not tell him that Ripley is, you know, bursts out of Naomi Rapace's chest.
Exactly.
Oh, bollocks. Spain have just gone 1-0 up.
Oh, why is that upset? Have you got someone in a bet or something, Peter?
No, but I live in Northern Ireland and I have a lot of friends that follow the Republic of Ireland as their national team.
It seems like a poor choice, if I'm honest.
Well, when the options are basically the Republic of Ireland or Northern Ireland, you've got, you know, it's
Northern Ireland all the way.
Rock and a hard place. Because they're both
and
shit.
Northern Ireland is a hard place.
Yeah. Northern Ireland's silly. You don't even have your own flag.
No, we don't officially.
They have their own money, though.
Yeah, we've got shitloads of that. Weird different kinds of money.
Maybe just use the money as a flag.
We should do. And we're getting all that money changed because Northern Bank, which is one of our... Basically, every bank that is set up in Northern Ireland gets to print its own money.
Yeah.
For some weird reason. So
it's the same in Scotland. Why can't we have it here? I want
those weird money. Scotland only has Bank of Scotland. And then it has the proper Bank of England money. But Northern Ireland has...
the Ulster Bank.
Yeah, we've got Ulster Bank and Northern Bank and Bank of Ireland and Allied Irish print their own notes. So there's like 5 or 6, if you include Scottish notes as well, different bank notes that you can get over here. So there's a whole variety, and we have little plastic fivers as well. But
where
one of the banks
out of plastic?
Here, they just, I don't know, about 10 years ago, they just went, we're going to make £5 notes out of plastic. You'll fucking love it. And everybody went, oh, that's a bit weird. And then we got plastic fivers for a few years.
Yeah.
And then you had to get like A5 wallets.
But yeah, Northern Bank just got bought. Oh, Northern Bank got bought ages ago, and they've just been rebranded by their Danish bank, Danske Bank. So now we're going to have banknotes that have Danske Bank written on them.
Seems like a poor choice for Ireland.
It's weird. It's just all over the place. But it could be worse.
I mean, rebrand it, but don't rebrand it to a name no one can really pronounce.
It's going to be hilarious trying to watch people with like really thick Belfast accents trying to talk about Danske Bank.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But anyway, more importantly, Prometheus.
No banks in Prometheus.
No.
Spoiler.
That's
where they went wrong.
It
should have just been a really tense economical drama. And at the end, Ridley Scott bursts out and goes, surprise!
No banknotes either, actually. No money at all. No. Credits. Credits are mentioned.
Yes.
And then Damon Lindelof turns up and goes, the money was dead all along.
Yeah. So yeah, that film, I was disappointed, personally. Peter, yep. How did you feel?
I sort of went into it with slightly lowered expectations.
How much lowered?
Well, I'd seen other people basically moaning about it being shit.
Oh no, I'd already seen that, so my expectations were lowered and I was still disappointed.
Oh, yeah, I kind of went into it with lowered expectations and still came out thinking that was an all right sci-fi film, but it wasn't it had no bearing at all on Alien. There was.
Do you know what I would have really liked in that? Do you know what they made it a really good sci-fi film?
What?
If they'd
lightsabers.
If they'd cut out all the really obvious nods to Alien that made it kind of dull.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so it was a little bit disappointing, but I don't think it was as bad as a lot of people are making out.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was terrible. I just didn't think it was.
I think there are issues with it, and there's a lot of plot holes to it. And
it's not like I hated it, and it was eminently watchable. It just wasn't amazing either. It's not a film that I'm going to rush out to get on Blu-ray when it comes out. I'm not going to be like, I need this now. I'm just going to be like, oh, I'll get it at some point.
My feelings have changed a bit because I've seen it twice now. And I went in the first time wanting a new Alien. Because as I said on screen during the other day, like, Alien is a massive part of why I like film so much. It's like, it's up there with top five sort of thing. So the first time round, I was utterly disappointed with it. I thought it was shit, basically. And then I went and saw it a second time, and it's probably because I was expecting it to be shit again, or I knew that it was an Alien. And I came out the second time thinking it was fantastic. So it's just bizarre. Like you say, the fact that it nods to Alien so much, it, you know, you can't help but think it wants to be Alien.
Yeah.
But once you get rid of the thought that it's not, it becomes its own film, which I find absolutely bizarre.
That's not that's not what bothered me with the nods to Alien. What bothered me with the nods to Alien was you like, they're such specific nods to Alien that you're like, I know exactly what's going to come next.
Yeah. And it was so strangely done as well, because they made such a big deal out of it not being an Alien prequel.
Yeah.
And then they put so much in it, which is quite obviously make it an Alien. Like, I don't care what they say, that film is an Alien prequel.
Yeah.
It's just very badly done.
Yeah.
But if they had have stripped all that out of it, they could have still had the Geiger sort of design look to it.
Mm.
It doesn't bear the Alien name in any way.
No.
And if they'd have pulled out the few sort of very, very over the top obvious Alien references,
yeah,
it could have stood on its own as a sort of a tense sci-fi horror film.
Yeah, I thought the stuff that wasn't to do with Alien was good. It wasn't brilliant, but it was enjoyable.
Yeah, I think because I can accept like the things like obviously where the engineers black goo stuff was arranged like the eggs of the alien.
Yeah,
I think I looked at that first time and I thought, well, that's obvious, you know, what they're trying to do there. But then the second time I thought, well, if the aliens have evolved from that, then perhaps, if anything, it's actually a nod from Alien to Prometheus, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
it's a reverse nod. So I sort of accepted those sorts of things afterwards, because I just thought of it as a reverse
It was
sort of play on it. The one thing I didn't enjoy was the characters, really, because in every Alien, it's the crew and the people that make the film. Because obviously, the first Alien, you've got almost an hour, if not more, of pure character building, where you see them on the ship waking up, and there's that banter. And the same happens in Aliens and Alien 3. Obviously, it isn't a crew, but it's a similar setup where you build up to know each character, and then Alien 4 is the same with the crew of that lot. But in this one, I'm a massive fan of Idris Elba, but I thought his character was pointless. His accent was awful. The two pilots, one of them is the Asian guy from the Countdown episode of It Crowd.
Shit, he is, yes. Oh,
which
fuck,
I couldn't,
you're so right.
I couldn't get past, every time he talked, I just wanted him to go, this is Street Countdown. Like that. That was just the most bizarre sort of casting choice. Yeah. And I didn't really bond with any of them except for Michael Fassbender, Charlize Theron, and Noomi Rapace.
I really bonded with Idris Elba. I thought they didn't spend very much time with him, but I thought what they did, he got across his character very well.
I thought, as I was watching that, I thought that a prequel movie, this is like down the rabbit hole, I thought that a prequel to Prometheus about Idris Elba's character would have been really good.
Oh, that would have been awesome, yeah.
I think that character had the potential to be fantastic and just wasn't really used.
Yeah, he's a great space
maybe,
captain.
Maybe it's because he didn't have enough to sort of work around him or work with, but I just didn't really get a good sort of bond with any of them, really.
Did you notice...
The male scientist that goes out with Noomi Rapace is way too good looking to be a scientist.
Yeah.
So that threw that out the window. But like I say, Noomi Rapace, Charlize Theron and Michael Fassbender, I thought were absolutely fantastic.
Did you notice Timothy Spall's son was in it as well?
Yeah, Rafe Spall. Because I obviously know him from the Shadow Line, the TV series, where he played an absolute nut job. I think he's a fantastic actor. But again, I thought there was no need for him to be American.
No, that's true. I did think that was odd, the way there were some English accents in it, and then the English actors that they had weren't allowed to speak in their normal accents, which would have made it feel a lot more natural.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other one was Sean Harris, who played Fifield. Or Fifield, because he's the bloke. Have you seen Creep, the horror film?
No.
Set in the London Underground.
No.
He plays the creep from Creep, and he's a proper method actor. And like I watched a documentary about how he made Creep, and he was even between takes, he was running around the tube stations screaming at people. And I thought his character was trying way too hard to be like that annoying prick character.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem natural at all. But having said that, I thought his was the most tense bit when they opened the door.
Yep.
They said Fifield's camera has come back online, and they opened the door. That I thought was really tense.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were a few moments that were quite tense and felt quite like Alien. Like you say, Alien, I think, is one of the greatest movies of all time. And it's because of the atmosphere and the tone and how tense it all feels. But there's very few shots in Alien that you actually see a scary monster.
Yes, yeah. I can't even fucking talk today. What is this? Implied. That's the word.
Yeah.
It's all implied in Aliens, like the scene with the chains and there's a bit swinging and when he looks up and like gets water on him from Alien and the swinging chains and you can just make out the shape of the alien swinging in there as well, but it's all implied, and there's none of that in Prometheus, which I thought was a bit of a missed opportunity, really.
Yeah.
And it's bizarre, because I thought, on one hand, you've got, obviously, Alien, they were going into the unknown, but there was, you just knew that it wasn't a good situation. So in this one, I thought, they're going into the unknown, but they're going with it with a completely different attitude. They're going from a happy discovery sort of point of view. So from that side of things, I can understand why there isn't as much tension. But on the other hand, you don't get that feeling of going into the unknown.
Yeah, and once the shit hits the fan, there should be that tension, and it still doesn't come.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very hard to talk about without.
Yeah, no, exactly. Mentioning but there's two issues I really had with it. Is one, there's just so many plot holes in it. Just like fucking gigantic, can drive a car through plot holes.
It asks a lot. It asks the audience to make a lot of assumptions.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I wouldn't necessarily consider them as plot holes as such, more as missing pieces. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably where the sequel to Prometheus will sort of come in handy, and probably will make Prometheus a much better film because it will just complete the whole thing.
Mm. But the second one is the fact that they, although like it might be a little bit to do the sequel, but it's also not to say that, it's the fact that they seem to set up a plot and questions to ask like three different times in the movie, and like the first two times just completely throw away all they've set up, and like, and now we're doing something else. You're like, oh, okay, you spent like 20 minutes setting all of that up, you're just ignoring it. That's fine, but it would be good if you paid off on some of that, no? Oh, the movie's over now. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
But it was written by Damon Lindelof, wasn't it?
Yeah.
That's kind of what he does.
Yeah.
I had a couple of observations about it. For a start, Ridley Scott really does not like androids, does he?
No.
No.
Also, Alien series and Blade Runner into consideration.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott's got a chip on his shoulder. And also, Guy Pearce.
Oh.
What the fuck was that about?
Yeah.
I don't understand why they just didn't get an old person.
Yeah, who could have had so much more sort of gravitas. People like,
yeah, Duke Gambon or John Hurt or...
Do you know what?
I mean, John Hurt would have been a fantastic... I know, yeah. Oh, no. I've just twigged. You can't use him, obviously, because of Alien.
Yeah.
But do you know what
I really don't understand?
Any number that could have done a few days' work. I mean, he was only in the movie for 20 minutes. Yeah.
What I really don't understand is why that character is in it at all.
Well, that's true, I suppose.
Kind of just feels...
I understand that.
It just kind of feels pointless,
but I understand it.
Oh, no, they set it up in the story, but it also feels like this just completely unnecessary element they add that makes no impact on any other plot element at all. Like, no, everything else it causes would have happened anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I totally agree with you there.
You're just like, oh, did you need to like pad out like an extra 5 minutes of this film with some weird philosophy stuff? Just, he comes in and gives you that, and then that's it. What?
Charlize Theron was good, though, I thought.
She's cool, yeah.
And obviously, everybody's raving about Michael Fassbender.
He's brilliant in it. He's absolutely amazing.
He's such a fantastic actor anyway, but I thought if it weren't for him, that I think Prometheus would have been a whole lot worse.
Do you know what I would have watched quite happily? You know the bit where he's alone on the ship towards the beginning? Yeah. I would watch like a 40-minute film of that quite happily.
I'd just watch a 40-minute film of him playing basketball.
Yeah,
on a bike.
Him playing basketball on a bike, and then
how long before that's a looping GIF?
And then and then watching Lawrence of Arabia, you just be like, yes, oh, this is awesome. Yeah, he's good in it. He's brilliant.
He does need to do a Peter O'Toole biopic.
It's uncanny, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Oh, he's just so spot on in it.
Has anybody heard how it's going at the box office?
No, I was wondering that myself just a minute ago, actually.
Because this is another concern I have, is that if this film, like, it's getting a lot of backlash, and if it really doesn't do well at the box office, then we might never get another R-rated movie.
Well, it's more the question, if it doesn't do well, will they make the sequels that are meant to pay off on this? Which is sort of the issue when you set something up, like, as going, well, we're going to answer that in the sequel. Like, setting up from the beginning is always a little bit worrying when you don't know how it's going to do.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine if you do that. If you're filming all at the same time, then that's fine. Or if you like film the second and the third together, then that's fine, because you can like ask questions in the second that get answered in the third. But asking questions in the first that are meant to get answered in like the second or even the third film without having those films sign off on is a very odd attitude to take.
And you would think that somebody like Ridley Scott could probably get a studio to sign in for 3 movies. Yeah, make them all in one run.
Yeah, like without really trying very hard.
Yeah.
Especially if it's alien based as well.
Yeah.
But that's the other thing, I think, because part of me thinks he's been brave in going back to it, because it's such a globally loved sort of franchise, isn't it? That you think,
oh, yeah, so.
Even if you put your heart and soul, which it doesn't feel like he has, but even if you put your heart and soul into it, the chances are people are never going to think it lived up to the originals.
No. Yeah, well, this is true. What order do you rate the Alien films in, Lewis?
Alien, Aliens, Alien 4, Alien 3.
Yeah.
But Alien 3 needs to be the director's cut, because people slag it off rotten, but I actually really do think it's a good film, especially if you watch the director's cut. I think there is a lot going on there that people haven't given it a chance for.
That is correct. I will accept some people like Aliens better than Alien, and I would accept that that's a close one.
See, it is a good film. I can't help but think it doesn't have, again, it doesn't have any of the attention until it gets to the end, where she obviously goes and visits the Queenie bit, and it's got bits and bobs, but it doesn't have, it's basically an alien action
film.
Yeah,
it's an action movie. Yeah, well, after the first one, they all turned into action movies, didn't they?
It's like Alien was a horror. Or a thriller. Aliens was an action. Alien 3 tried to be gritty and dark, but it didn't really come off that way, although it is still a good film. And then Alien 4 is just basically a stylized go at it.
Yeah.
But I love them all. I just think they've all got qualities there that are sort of redeeming features.
Yeah.
That's true.
And I like them for being different. I like the fact that they're all different. And people slag off 3 and 4 and what have you. But I think 4, I like the glossy, stylized effect because it sets it apart from the others and it gives it a different feel as well.
Yeah, and the Winona Ryder and Sigourney Weaver thing, I think, works really well in 4.
Yes, yeah. I
think those two characters reflect each other really well. But 3, I think, basically from the opening scenes of 3, it's very difficult to claw that back.
Mm.
Where they, because at the end of 2, it kind of finishes on a hopeful note.
Yes.
And then the curtain lifts on Alien 3, and it's like, yeah, fuck that. She's on her own again. Yeah. Only this time, prisoners and stuff.
Yeah. And the dog trouble alien. Is, you got dog alien. So I can't remember. It's director's cut is a dog.
No, the regular one's a dog. The yeah, director's cut is a cow.
There's a cow. That's the one. Whatever, that's the way around. Because I think Alien 4 probably put the whole thing to bed. But I do want I want them to make an alien film where it reaches a populated planet like Earth. I just want them to get to that point where all those threats of it being a, you know, species destroying creature start to sort of come to fruition, really. I want to see that film.
Yeah, that would be quite good, actually, like a mass disaster movie.
Yeah, or invasion. Because I think that could be done quite subtly to start with as well and quite tense and then build into a big sort of action thing. So there.
Right. Shifting onwards, probably worth talking about some games. And Peter, you've been playing something that I hear is terrible.
Yes, I have. I played the Game of Thrones RPG.
Mm.
For review. And I really...
That sigh kind of says it all, really.
Yeah.
I really don't want to play that game ever again. It's... I was so filled with hope. Obviously, I love the...
I was going to say, that's even worse coming from a massive Game of Thrones fan.
Yeah, and I have since read other reviews where people have said that it has redeeming qualities if you're a big fan of the TV show or the books. And I read them and was like, no, it really doesn't. I was really hopeful for it because I am such a fan of the TV show and the books. So I was really looking forward to it. And I knew that it was probably going to be a little bit rough around the edges because it's from a small studio. And I was prepared to forgive that. And within, I think, probably within the first half an hour, the voice acting in it was just infuriating. It was tragic. It was kind of like, do you remember like 5 or 10 years ago, the football games? Used to have commentary that sounded like it was spliced together. So it would be like, yeah. And now it's Terry on the ball.
Yeah,
that was the voice awesome.
Acting, the voice acting in the whole of the Game of Thrones movie is like that. Or the whole of the Game of Thrones RPG is like that. So even to the point where the actors that they've gone out and signed up from the TV show, who are, some of them are quite like accomplished actors that have been acting for years on stage and screen. And are putting in the performances of their lives on that HBO TV show. And they put them in this game and make them sound like 8-year-old kids reading from a card. It's absolutely terrible. And then all the mechanic of the game is just so complicated. And it has no need to be complicated. Basically, it's a hack and slash game. But every time you want to slash or hack, you have to queue up that move with a wheel that should make it technical and tactical. But it's basically just queuing up the same 3 moves over and over and over again.
Every time you want to slash, you tell it to hack. Every time you want to hack, you tell it to slash. It's very confusing.
It's awful. The only redeeming feature is that it's about 30 hours long, which is a slog. The last 5 or 6 hours, it does that thing that Game of Thrones does really well, where it takes the slow, steady, sort of complex pace, and all of a sudden it all speeds up. And there's a couple of quite significant plot twists. So it's really obviously made by fans of the series. They just happen to be fans of the series that aren't very good at making games. And that's really tragic.
Mm.
So yeah, it's not like I was really looking forward to it and really willing to paper over the cracks of things that a small studio making a big game necessarily have to do. But it's on almost every level, it's just dreadful.
That's not good. So
probably not worth buying or renting.
Doesn't sound like it.
It's not worth your time. They sent me the game for free and I wish I hadn't had to spend 30 hours trawling through it.
It's basically, it's not worth glancing at casually.
No, that's basically it.
Do not look at the case, people.
That's pretty strong.
The character animations are dreadful. They'll be talking to you in this horrible staccato, like primary school child reading an assembly kind of voice. And because they don't really seem to know what to do with a character while it's doing this, he's pulling all these poses like he's in a fashion shoot. Only they're also, and bearing in mind this is on like, this is Men of the Night's Watch, some of them, and they're like soldiers and knights and grizzled men, and they're all standing like Larry Grayson. They're all like hands on hips and now hands at the shoulders, and here's a big theatrical shrug.
That's just
while
how
they're talking about cutting somebody's head off.
That's just how I stand.
Give us a quick Which Way to the Beat.
Oh, so yeah, it's dreadful and people really shouldn't bother with it. Wait for a good game. There's bound to be a good Game of Thrones game. It's such a good setting for a game and it has such possibility. So yeah, wait for that. And avoid this.
Lewis.
Hello.
Mr. Gaston over there. You watched Snow White, which I'm quite interested to hear your opinions on.
I did watch Snow White, yes. I was quite looking forward to it, because the trailers it look...
Snow White and the Huntsman, isn't it? Or whatever it's called.
Yeah, yeah, Snow White and the Huntsman.
The trailers look awesome.
Yeah, the trailers make it look really, really good. Unfortunately, the trailers show you all of the good bits.
Oh.
Which fit into 2.5 minutes. Oh. No, it's... it's
that's a bit disappointing.
It's not that, it's not that bad. It's a missed opportunity, I think. The biggest problem is I couldn't give a shit about Snow White or the Huntsman, and considering it's called Snow White and the Huntsman, it's a pretty big flaw. I don't think Kristen Stewart has got any acting credibility to her whatsoever.
No, I was kind of hoping she might have a facial expression in this movie, because I haven't seen one from her yet.
She still looks like she's been pushed on and drugged up to the eyeballs and is a bit bemused by it all.
confused that there are cameras.
Yeah. Someone's at the side going, "This is your line." And she just repeats it. I just think she's shit. Stick to Twilight, because the teen fuckwits that watch that don't give a shit whether you're a good actor or not.
At least if you put Twilight.
See Robert Pattinson take his top off.
At least if she's in movies exclusively titled with Twilight, we know to avoid them.
Yeah, exactly. That's the biggest problem. I just think they could have got, even if it was, I know they've gone for the big name to draw that audience in, which is a shame, because they could have gone for someone much better, and perhaps even someone unknown.
Zooey Deschanel.
It's probably a bit too old, I suppose, but that would have been
still awesome.
Oh, sorry, I was just thinking about
Zooey Deschanel. You just slipped off into a daydream. Fair enough.
And like I said, I don't give a shit about the Huntsman. But that said, the graphics in it are absolutely fantastic. I'd go and watch it just for those, because the troll, the phantom armies that shatter when they get hit by swords and things like that, it's proper well done. And Charlize Theron, again, if she wasn't in it, the film would just be an absolute pile of poo. She plays the queen, and she's absolute fantastic.
Looks a little bit like a young Kim Basinger.
Yes, yeah, she does. Yeah. I was thinking about Charlize Theron and Kim Basinger. she's absolutely brilliant. She plays the sort of bitch role absolutely brilliantly. She's proper evil. And it's quite a stylistic film. It's got a very strong identity to it. It's just, it's got no real substance to it. which is a shame. But it's a worth. I gave it 3 stars when I reviewed it because it is, you know, it's not a waste of time to watch it. It just could have been a really good sort of fantasy film that unfortunately they missed the opportunity on.
Hmm. That is a shame.
Hmm. And it's stupid things like, I know it's the director's first sort of feature length film. So I think in terms of CGI and style sort of pace, it's well done. It's a bit slow in the middle, but other than that, I think he's done a good job. The problem is he's obviously fell in love with slow motion. And at one point Snow White jumps over like a twig that's on fire. And it's like, oh, we need to slow-mo that. And it's like, really? Oh, really? You could have spat on that and it would have been put out. It's not a dramatic piece, the slow-mo. But yeah, so it's like I said, it's not all bad. It's just not... It's a bit wishy-washy, really.
Hmm.
But like I say, go and watch it for or rent it whenever it comes out on DVD, purely for Theron or Theron. And the CGI, because I really was impressed by CGI.
I am. Good to know. Babel Rising is a game that I've been playing. It's pretty good. It's like with the move and stuff. And
Chris has come alive.
So
I didn't understand a word you just said.
So, yeah, I've been playing this game, Babel Rising. Review is on the site. It's a good game.
What game was it called?
Babel Rising.
Right, thank you. So, slow down.
Sorry, Grandad. So yeah, I've been playing this game called Babel Rising. Take a move controller.
Is it not pronounced Babel?
I was going to say, is it
Babel? Babel.
Is in
know.
The
Babel.
Film?
Babel would probably be right. Tower of Babel? Or Babel?
Yeah.
Babel. All right, Babel Rising. Weather. Game. you try to build the Tower of Babel. So, and you try to stop them. With move controller. It's fun. It's kind of like an Evil God game, which there aren't a huge amount of. It's sort of a cross between Evil God game and Tower Defense a little bit, in that like all the enemies are taking a set path and you're like, fuck you, burn with fireballs. So yeah, you use your move controller to control an on-screen cursor, and then you've got like, there's 4 powers. There's earth, wind, water, fire, and you can have any 2 selected in a level, and you can kind of flick back and forth between them just by hitting the X button. And you kind of like with all of them, you get like a short one, you get like a short, quick one. You just tap the move button on the move controller.
That sounds very similar to From Dust.
Yeah, but From Dust, you're trying to save them, aren't you? Not kill them.
Oh, yeah, no, I just mean in terms of you have those controls and you can do quick effects or you hold them down.
Yeah.
And it gives you grand effect.
Oh, yeah. Well, in this, the quick effect, like with the fireball, with the fire, you throw a fireball at them. With water, starts a rainstorm, which slows them down, that kind of stuff. And then you have the longer press to get a longer effect, which is like, earth is an earthquake or, wind is the best one because wind, the short press is lightning bolts, and the long press is you start a tornado and you can just guide the tornado and pick them all up in your tornado. And then what's great is it picks them all up, but as long as you keep the momentum going, they all stay in the tornado, and then you just fling it in a direction and let go, and they all go flying out of the tornado in that direction to their deaths, which is pretty awesome. Yeah, it's very enjoyable. And then there's like mechanics like priests, and the priests have got shields that shield them against certain of your powers. So you have to flip to the other one and take them out. Probably the best thing about it, though, is the super effects, which slowly charge up as you're killing all these priests and workers and stuff. And
you sold me at killing priests.
Yeah. but these super effects charge up and like, the most useful one's water because it just floods like the bottom 10 levels of the tower, which is pretty handy because it just wipes out anyone in those levels. Yeah, it's a very enjoyable game. I think scored it about an 8. It's good fun. I played it in long enough stints without wanting to stop that it made my arm hurt from using the move controller for so long.
That's only about 10 minutes for me.
Though it started to hurt after about 3 hours, and then I realized I couldn't feel my knuckles anymore because the grip on that is ridiculously uncomfortable.
What are the graphics like?
It's nice. It's kind of it's slightly cartoony art style. It's not amazing, but it's quite nice. Looks good. The sound effects are lovely because the workers chant, and then as they get closer to the top of the tower, they start to chant a bit faster. But the most satisfying sound effect is when you kill a priest. And the sound they make when you kill the priest is just fucking lovely, which sounds really
wrong. Is it a Wilhelm scream?
No, it's not that. It's kind of like a cross between a grunt and a scream, but it's really nice. I like it. it's just a good sound. Just a good sound. Hearing them.
You like a good grunt and scream.
That's what I want, you know? That's what I love. love a good grunt and
scream. That's Christmas sorted out.
Love a good grunt and scream, really. There's nothing wrong with it. so it was fun. It's a good game. Very enjoyable. I recommend you go buy it. I don't know what the 360 version's like, because that uses Kinect. I have no idea how it is, so I can't recommend that. It's also just come out on iPad and iPhone and stuff today, which would be like in the past when this podcast comes out.
Ooh, yeah. What's it called?
Babel Rising.
Babel Rising.
I think it might be called Babel Rising HD because it's based on an old game from iOS, and I think they've updated the iOS version. And I think it's called
like HD. A Goosey Gander.
Yeah, it's very good, very good fun. You get on PSN or XBLABE. Yeah, like I said, I don't know what the Kinect version is like, and it's exclusively motion controls. There's no none of this non motion control shit. No, it's using a controller stuff. That's old hat now.
Who needs buttons and sticks?
What I found quite nice is the way that you hold down the button on the back of the move control, I don't know what it's called, the trigger button. Hold that, and then you can sort of, you wave the control left or right to spin the camera, move it up and down, which is a little bit fiddly at times, and they don't really explain the camera controls that clearly to you. Like, they explain that you can move it left and right, but they don't explain the moving it up, like pans the camera up and down, but it also like pans it in and out of the tower, so as you're moving up and down, which doesn't explain to you. So like for a while I was like, oh, that's really awkward, I can't see the tower, and I finally realized if I just did that and like moved it down, I could see all the tower again. So
if you're looking on iOS, it's called Babel Rising 3D.
That'd be it then,
because Babel Rising is the other one.
Yeah,
is the old one.
Yeah. The old one looks like good fun as well, but the new one definitely looks much better. Yes. So that's that game. It is rather enjoyable, and I would recommend it personally. What's up, Lewis?
Oh, no, I was going to buy it on my iPad, but I haven't updated my iPad since I bought it, so apparently I need iOS 5.
that's been out a while, I'd just
that's
say.
That's like a year.
Been out a while.
More than a year. I'm running the developer build of iOS 6 at the moment.
Mm.
Not much difference.
No.
I was expecting something then.
It's
not very good, but
the maps are pretty good as long as you're in America.
I think the maps seem to be more accurate for me.
The main
and much clearer.
The main thing I've noticed is they have like zero detail on them. Yeah. I mean, did you see the comparison that someone put up as in old maps against new maps where they'd search for King's Cross?
Yeah.
And the old maps was like that super detailed Google thing. And the new map was still centered in the right place. Didn't show 3/4 of the road names. And although he'd searched for King's Cross, there was nothing actually on it that said King's Cross, which wasn't that handy.
That has not been my experience.
But I hear the turn by turn's good.
I haven't used the turn by turn yet.
And also the 3D stuff is very cool.
What's not good?
Can't you do turn by turn on my one?
It will.
You can do step by step.
Yeah, step by step. But it doesn't speak to you as you go.
Yeah, this works like a car GPS.
Yeah,
I think.
It tells you like turn left in 12 miles or whatever.
And there are currently people sitting listening to this screaming that Android does that for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever. We're not talking about Android. We're talking about iOS.
Get a life, losers.
Anyway, Mr. Chapman, you and I have both read Before Watchmen.
Well, I haven't read all of it.
Have you read number one? Before is Before Watchmen, Minutemen number one, and then this week is Silk Spectre number one.
I have. Oh, every week?
Yeah. There's like, it's on a really weird schedule though, because there's like six series going on, so.
I have only read like the first half of Minutemen.
Well, how did you find it? I thought it was very enjoyable. I wasn't going to buy it. And then I went to the shop and they were like, I'll go and buy it. And I was like, oh, I don't really want to. And I left and I came back in and I bought it.
Yeah, I was preparing myself to have a little tantrum about it on account of loving The Watchmen and this being a cynical cash-in. But turns out that cynical cash-ins can actually be quite good.
Yeah, I thought it was quite enjoyable. I had no idea if they're all going to be good, but this was fairly enjoyable.
Yeah, the first half that I read was, it was drawn in a very similar style. It was written quite well, although you don't really know if it's going to match up to the Alan Moore's writing. But very little ever does, so that's understandable. But yeah, it seemed to be quite competent.
I think it's definitely good, but the Minutemen ones can be quite interesting because it explores a lot of the history of the Watchmen universe.
Yeah, and also the thought that struck me as I was reading it was the pressure that these guys must be under.
Yeah.
Because they know that everybody's just gathering around waiting for them to basically fuck it up. So yeah, I thought they did a good job so far.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's definitely enjoyable. I'd recommend getting it and just having a look and seeing if you like it. It's good fun. It's good book so far. But yeah, like I said, I've got no idea what the others are going to be like. Because there's like Silk Spectre and the Rorschach one and the Night Owl one. And
The Rorschach one can be so good.
And a Dr. Manhattan one and a Ozymandias one. So yeah. Should be interesting. What's quite weird though is they haven't really specified for them beforehand, particularly like when they're all set. So some of them are like, they're like about this character, but you don't know when in their career it's set, which is quite interesting. So you don't know what it's going to be like. But the Dr. Manhattan one looks quite interesting because it looks like it's just all about him inventing crazy shit. which I was like, you can go two ways with that. You can either just go super detailed on Vietnam, which would just be like a really depressing book. Or you can go like, here's him inventing crazy stuff. You're like, man, this is pretty crazy. And then you obviously do the obvious thing, which is like, look, we're exploring the human condition because he's no longer really human. This plot device took us 10 seconds to think of.
Yeah, it's tricky to deal with that character because he is so overpowered. So,
yeah.
And so much of that whole human condition shit is explored in The Watchmen.
Yeah, and it's also just, like going the human condition way is so fucking obvious a choice.
Yeah, to make it a main plot device, it is. Yeah, certainly. Yeah.
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 Lewis agrees, even though he couldn't give a shit.
No, I could give a shit. That's very mean.
Yeah, poor Lewis.
About comic books, Lewis.
Be nice to that there, Lewis.
You care about comic books.
Yeah.
The plot device should be he's got a massive blue cock.
He does.
Not that big.
Can make, well, he can make it as big as he wants, really. That's sort of the thing.
Have as many as he wants.
Have like 12 cocks if he felt like it. Just like one on his shoulder.
Like the Chelsea football team. Hey!
Oh. Wait, what?
I don't know enough about these things to be able to give a shit.
Why did the Chelsea football team got 12 cocks? That seems like the wrong number for a football team.
One of them's a referee.
Oh, okay.
It's like a joke that works on two levels.
They got subs.
And was specially designed to annoy Davs if he ever listens to this podcast.
He will. We get round to eventually. Still listen to
I expect in like 3 weeks some random comment on Twitter.
Yeah, he's still
Chelsea team aren't all cocks.
Still listening to E3 at the minute. Lewis.
Yes.
Which I just said about Dirt Showdown.
Yes, I completed it. Yay.
Sounds like a euphemism.
anything else you'd like to tell us about it, or is that just...
It's just a chance for me to brag. I completed a video game.
I'm very pleased with myself.
I'm good at this. No, I really enjoyed it. I've discovered it's not really a secret because I love to like Split Second, Burnout, and all this lot, and yet I never class myself as a racing game fan. But I loved it. I thought it was really enjoyable. The thing that I liked about it most was that it was. You never get to a point where you're so far ahead of everyone else that it becomes boring. It's always that if you crash, you're eighth again, and it's a real fight to be first. So it feels really good when you complete it and you do win because it feels like a true accomplishment. And I like the joyride mode because there's obviously the tour where you go through the championships. Joyride, which is basically free roaming, but you do stunts and tricks, so donuts, and that's basically where you hone your driving skills. But there are hidden packages to find and certain objectives to meet, so that was quite good as well. And then online, I'm enjoying online even as well, because people seem to actually give it a go and don't seem to care if they lose, or they know it's like a real competition almost. I did get one rather nice message. My PS3 got switched off by accident during a race. And when I turned it back on, I got a shitty PSN message from someone calling me a loser. And I'm shit at games. And blah, blah, blah. So I sent him one.
Well,
I sent
you
him
are
one
a
back
loser,
there.
To be fair. I mean, he's got
yeah,
that
I mean, I let that one go, but I'm not shit at games. Come
you
on.
Completed a game this week.
I know.
That accusation's entirely unfounded.
I'm nearly platinuming it. It's... Yeah, so I sent him one back saying, lots of love, kisses, and all that jazz.
It's always the best way to deal with idiots.
Yeah. But no, I really like it. And I like the variety of cars. Like, if you do the head-to-head, you get the souped-up Ford Fiestas and things like that. And then you go to demolition, you get the like hearses and things like that. I really enjoyed it.
I found the Hoonigan stuff really difficult.
What, like the skills
yeah,
and stuff?
Yeah. Sort of stunt driving bits.
I love the head-to-heads. The head-to-heads I've got really good at. The one that I struggle with, although I sort of taught myself that actually it's not about speed, it's more about control, is the block smashers. It took me a while before I could do those. And that's basically where you go around a track and it tells you which colour blocks you've got to smash and you've got to drive through them. But there are, so to say, yellow next and you've got to smash through five of those. And it takes you around in a certain direction around the track, but that's really difficult because it's constantly turning. And so it took me a while before I was able to complete those. But again, it felt like a challenge, and it felt good to be able to do it finally.
Hmm.
So yeah, I really really like it.
That is good to hear, Lewis. Good.
I enjoyed
to hear.
It. I thought it was great.
Hmm.
But I didn't play as much as you. I didn't complete it.
Loser.
I'm so shit at games.
Yeah.
Lewis is good because he finished it, but you just, Peter, you haven't finished it.
No, you haven't.
Oh, you can't see me right now, but I am hanging my head in shame.
It's not good.
I can tell because your voice has got further away from the microphone.
You just need to get better at games, Peter. That's the problem.
Yeah.
Try harder.
That's the problem. I don't really know. I think we're kind of running out of things to talk about now. Peter, anything else you fancy chatting about?
I could say that...
Oh, tell me about Indie Game the Movie. I want to know about Indie Game the Movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, bought Indie Game the Movie on iOS the other day. Downloaded it.
Is Phil Fisher cock in it?
Phil Fish is a total bellend. My iPad confused my movie purchase as a movie rental, so it's now jogged on and I have to wait and see how much they charge me for it.
Oh, yeah.
Knobheads. Which isn't in the indie spirit. But yeah, Indie Game the Movie is... kind of, it's a documentary that basically follows Phil Fish, the guy that made Fez.
Yeah.
Maked? Did I just say make?
Makes.
Yeah, he made Fez.
What's Fez?
Jesus Christ. Fez is a Xbox Live arcade game about, it's like a pixelated art style, but it's about a 2D guy that one day realizes that his world is actually 3D.
Yeah. Like Parappa the Rapper?
Pretty much. So then the mechanic, it's like a puzzle game, but the mechanic, it's like a platforming puzzle game, but the mechanic... You can jump and you can rotate the world around the 3D axis. So you can make different jumps and stuff out of that. It's really clever and really, really good. But the guy that made it is a bit of a dick. And it, so it follows him, and it follows the two guys that made Super Meat Boy.
Who don't seem like dicks.
Who, one of them is like quite, seems very nervous and feels the pressure of it all. They, for a start, they all get like super depressed. Mm. Which is, I was watching the movie thinking, you know, this is something that running quite a large-ish independent website, I can kind of identify with how they're feeling and the pressures that they're under and the work that they're putting in. And then at the end of the movie, I was like, oh no, they get a massive fucking check at the end of it.
Yeah.
So not quite the same. Yeah, one of the guys that made Super Meat Boy is kind of nervous and seems to feel the pressure of it a lot. The other guy is really cool. I wish I could remember the names, but he talks about like when he was young, he used to draw a lot and he was quite a withdrawn child. And he feels that he got sort of influenced by a lot of the video game stuff, and a lot of the things that he was drawing sort of helped him to be sort of, for want of a better word, a normal kid. And now he's making this game and he's thinking that, you know, somebody on the other side of the world could, like some kid could play his game and could be inspired in the same way. And the guy's nearly in tears talking about it. And it's like, Jesus, that's just a really nice thing. That's a really nice motivation to have.
Pure emotion.
Rather than just say, yeah, I'm good at writing lines of code and I want to make some money, so I'll make a game. But yeah, it follows it all quite closely. It's all quite a struggle and some tense bits with Phil Fish showing off pairs at PAX East. Because basically he had contracts that needed to be signed with his ex-business partner that he had split from. And if he didn't get these contracts signed to formalise the separation of the company, then he couldn't legally show Pairs at PAX 3, or Fez even, at PAX East. So like he was getting up on the morning of PAX East in Boston, still without these contracts signed, not knowing if he could actually go and show his game or not. And then in the end, he didn't actually care. He just went to show his game anyway. And I think the contracts ended up getting signed off okay, and everybody made loads of money. Hurrah. But there was some tense moments to it. But yeah, it was kind of, it's almost like a celebration of indie developers. And then it should kind of serve as a warning as well, because it's the pressure that those guys are under, because they spend I think Phil Fish spent 5 or 6 years actually making Fez. And they work largely on their own for however long they're awake every day. And the money doesn't come until the end. And even at that, I mean, this movie followed two very successful independent developers. But for those, every one of those successful indie developers, there are dozens that aren't successful.
You kind of wish they'd followed one that sucks, you know?
Yeah. Even, I mean, it's odd that they, I don't know if it was just luck the way it came out, or if they did follow several and then just made the movie from these two, but it's strange that the two people that they were following the story of ended up being two of the best-selling, most critically acclaimed independent games.
Yeah, exactly.
Of 2010.
So I wonder if they followed like 40 indie games and like haven't heard of half of them.
Yeah. And then they do a cool thing at the end with the credits. When they're rolling the credits, because the film was, I think the film was a Kickstarter project.
Yeah.
So there's lists and lists and lists of people's names at the end of it that obviously are just contributors. But in between those lists, they show little videos of other independent games.
Yeah.
So they sort of scroll up with the credits. So it's nice to a little bit of exposure for the scene and not just for the people involved in this movie.
Mm.
Quite nice to see.
I'm quite interested about the fact that HBO have picked up for a series.
Really?
Indie That's game weird. Series. Yeah, I don't know what it's going to be about. Well, presume about indie weird. Games, but...
As I said, there's probably a clue in the title.
Yeah.
But knowing HBO, it's probably about crime wave in Boston or something.
Yeah.
With lots of naked people.
Yeah.
It'll be about murder and boobs. Isn't that what everything on HBO's about?
Yeah, it's...
That's why we love them.
It was picked up by Homicide, boobies,
and something beginning with O.
Opiates.
Homicide, boobies, and opiates. That's what it stands for.
But yeah, it's I enjoyed it. It's like an hour and 45 minutes long. Anybody with an interest in indie games or game development or sort of creative pursuits will probably enjoy it as well. Although it does get a little bit depressing at points.
Apparently, cool. It's been... HBO have optioned Indie Game the Movie for the basis of a fictional series. So...
Ah, so they're going to make a movie, or they're going to make a series about an independent game developer.
Yeah, about making independent games.
Well, that could be cool.
It'd be like The Office, but with independent games.
Yeah. Be like The Office, but with more neckbeard.
Yeah. Talking of beard, I've been watching a lot of NBA lately, mostly for the beard. Some impressive okay. beards in the NBA. Don't get
That's
that.
That's why I watch the WNBA.
Don't get that in football.
You are quite weird.
Don't get a lot of beards in football. There's some good beards. I mean, I showed you James Harden's beard, didn't I?
Yes.
That's a good beard.
That is a resplendent beard.
Yeah. Whereas
a man has some commitment to facial.
Yeah. Hair. Whereas James LeBron has just got a weird beard.
He looks like some sort of Amish trader.
Yeah. It's just kind of like, as you said, it looks like his chin's trying to escape through his beard. It just looks like the beard's gonna fall off the bottom of his face or something. It's very weird. It looks like he's got like a 3-centimeter line where he can grow facial hair and that's it.
So he grows as much as he can from it.
Just there. I can grow it like on my chin, but nowhere else. So strange man. Strange man is LeBron James. Very good basketball though. Very good at putting the ball in the basket, which is largely the aim.
At scoring the baskets.
He's very good at scoring the baskets. He scored a fucking ridiculous one in Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals, and no one cares. So, carrying on.
Your ridiculous sport with no
Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Playoffs, or whatever you just said.
Indeed. He wasn't so good in Game 1 of the NBA Conference Finals, but well.
See, I stopped watching after game 4.
Game 4 was quite a good game. Game 6 was amazing, though.
Oh, dear God.
Game 6, 46 points with 5 rebounds. Has it been done since 1968? And crazy.
It fascinates me how you do this. You did it with football as well.
What?
You just woke up one day and decided that you were going to watch football. Within a week, you knew the history of football. You knew every single player's name. And now you've done it with basketball.
Yeah.
You do that.
I'm thinking about taking on baseball next, but it seems quite boring.
Do it.
It's like Johnny number 5. I'm going to read. Done.
You don't seem to get very many score points in baseball. So
score points?
Yeah, you get lots of score points in basketball.
Think of the statistics, Chris.
Oh, God. You'll be able to bore us next week.
There's just baseball.
That's harsh. You didn't bore me.
The thing is, I quite like cricket, but baseball just doesn't really appeal.
Oh.
You've got to do it with something like chess. Come back to us next week with a history of chess.
A chess savant.
Yeah.
It's quite impressive, though, really.
The thing is...
It is impressive, but it just annoys me. I just think, how can you do that?
It's because I'm shit at sports, so I've got to... I just pretend that I'm good by knowing stuff instead. I'm like, yeah, no, I know all this shit.
Just get the impression of the IT crowd. Yeah, yeah, no, they're having a laugh, aren't they? Trouble with Arsenal is they just walk it in, don't they?
I still haven't forgiven Oakwood. No one cares. Right. Just carry on. Lewis, have you done a quiz for us?
I have done a quiz.
Should we do the quiz? Seems like a plan.
Yes.
So kind of running out of things to re-talk about. I could keep going about the NBA playoffs for a while, but I don't think anyone's really that interested. So
no, you don't have to. Plus, we haven't studied like you have.
I didn't know there was going to be a test.
Yeah. Freak.
What I like about basketball compared to football is that with the people I follow on Twitter, there's only like 3 really informed people who know about basketball, and they all agree with me about stuff, which I like. Whereas football, everyone's got a fucking opinion, and most of them are wrong. So,
yeah. Opinions are like arseholes. Everyone's got one, and yours stinks.
Yeah. What's kind of pissed me off about football at the moment is this general, very widespread assumption that Roy Hodgson, despite being a professional manager, has got everything wrong. Despite the FA going, this is probably the best manager for the job. Everyone's like, no, I pick a fucking better team than that. What the fuck's he doing? The FA didn't pick you so much. They picked him. So he's probably better than you, just at a guess. But,
What do the FA know?
But Stuart Downing, Chris. Come on, he took Stuart Downing.
Well, yeah, presumably because he fits into the style of football that he wants to play. Rather than
shit?
Just because someone's shit at their club doesn't necessarily mean they'll be shit for the national team, given that they play different styles of football and he's fitting them into a different system.
I've got a theory about Stuart Downing. I think he took him so that in practice they could pretend they were only playing with 10 men.
Harsh. No, that's kind of my...
Should we do a quiz?
Let's do the quiz. Let's not talk about sports.
Tuff Cub's probably asleep listening to this.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird as well because it's not wrestling, so it just feels a bit
quick,
odd.
Somebody mentioned disco.
Night Fever.
Gloria Gaynor.
Night Fever.
Oh, it even
Night
had gay in
Fever.
It. It's fine.
You know how to do it.
No, it's just creepy when you do that, Chris.
Come back to us next week with lacrosse.
Do you think we could just perk up and put Tough Cub to sleep by like alternating between dance tunes and sports facts?
Probably. I think that's probably how it works.
And then go for the money shot with some Transformers news. okay, quiz. Quiz. Because we had a chat about Prometheus, this quiz is about films that feature or are based around extraterrestrials. And I know I say it every week, but it is quite an easy quiz.
Oh dear.
So, 1 to 10. Oh,
they're all based about Independence Day. I will fucking nail it.
1 to 10.
Yeah.
Okay. Question number 1. What was the name of the spaceship where the terror from Alien takes place?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
That's an easy one.
Yeah, that is an easy one. That's a really... Oh, okay. That's probably wrong, isn't it? Probably.
Number 2. The short film Alive in Joburg was adapted into which very popular full-length feature film? Question number 3. I'm doing this in between drags on the
side. I hear that. Yeah. Very jealous.
Question 3. What was the first building destroyed by aliens in Independence Day? The White House, Empire State Building, US Bank Tower, or Capitol Records Building?
Oh, that's toughy. What was the third option?
There was the White House, Empire State Building, US Bank Tower, or Capitol Records Building. Question number 4. Brain bugs and arachnids are just some of the aliens in which film? Question number 5. Slim Whitman's song Indian Love Call was responsible for killing off what aliens? Question number 6. What do Ian Holm and Winona Ryder have in common? Question number 7. Which film features extraterrestrials called the Fixits, as named by one of the film's characters? Eight. The mysterious sinking of the USS Montana leads to alien encounters in which film?
So what was that?
The mysterious sinking of the USS Montana leads to alien encounters in which film?
Was that number 8? Sorry.
That was number 8, yes. Number 9. What substance is used in the film The Faculty to identify if someone was infected or not? And number 10, which film starring Leslie Nielsen and Robbie the Robot was one of the main inspirations for how modern-day sci-fis are constructed? Are we done?
2 seconds. What was that last one again?
Which film starring Leslie Nielsen and Robbie the Robot was one of the main inspirations for how modern day sci-fis are constructed?
Okay. And what was it? Was Ian Holm and who? Winona Ryder?
Winona Ryder.
Okay, I have to have a think about that. That is a toughie.
Okay, how many do you think you got?
Well, I've got 7, but I'm still thinking about the answer to question 6. So
I've answered 6, probably got 2 of them right.
Confidence, Peter. Okay, question number 1 then. What was the name of the spaceship where the terror from Alien takes place?
Nostromo.
Yes, that's what I wrote.
It was the USS Nostromo. Question 2. Short film Alive in Joburg was adapted into which film?
District 9.
Yeah, District 9.
Yep. What was the first building destroyed by aliens in Independence Day?
I think it's the US Bank Tower.
I said Capitol Records.
It was the US Bank Tower. Big one in LA. So 3-2 to Chris. Brain bugs and arachnids are in which film?
Men in Black.
Nope.
Is it Starship Troopers?
It is Starship Troopers.
That was choice number 2.
It really needed to be choice number 1.
Such a stickler for the rules.
4-2 to Chris. Slim Whitman's song Indian Love Call was responsible for killing off what aliens?
No idea.
The Martians in Mars Attacks.
Yeah.
Never seen it.
Oh, have you not? It's a brilliant film. Question whatever. What do Ian Holm and Winona Ryder have in common?
They're both in the Aliens films, but they're not in the same one, I don't think.
Peter?
They both have an I in their name.
I'm going to have to give it to Chris. I was looking for a bit more specific, but they've both been androids in Alien films. Ian Holm from the first one, and obviously Winona Ryder from Resurrection.
I completely forgot Winona Ryder was an android in that film. Just because that's how she acts in every film.
I thought she was being Spock's mum again. Which film features extraterrestrials called the Fixits, as named by one of the film's characters?
No idea.
Oh, I haven't got this written down, but I can take a guess. Is it Despicable Me?
No. Okay. It is Batteries Not Included.
Oh, that's an awesome film.
Yeah. 8. The mysterious sinking of the USS Montana leads to which alien encounters in which film?
Is it The Abyss?
I guess Chris? A Battleship.
It is The Abyss.
Yay!
Well done. Question 9. What substance is used in the film The Faculty to identify if someone is infected?
I haven't seen that film.
I've put, is it the kind of weird oily goop you get in glow sticks?
No. I can sort of see why you thought that, though, because they snorted it out of biros, and they cracked biros and then snorted it. It was cocaine.
Oh.
And homemade cocaine. Question 10. Which film starring Leslie Nielsen and Robbie the Robot was one of the main inspirations for how modern day sci-fis are constructed?
Is it Forbidden Planet?
Yes.
It is Forbidden Planet, yes.
I think I won quite handily.
You did.
I got 4 out of 10.
You got 7.
Yeah,
didn't
I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. No, I got 8, I think. Oh, no, 7. Yeah, because Battleship. Ooh. I got 7 because Battleship was wrong. Yeah.
You
didn't get The Abyss, though.
Yeah, that's
you?
Why I said I got that wrong. Oh. Yes, I got 7.
I'm just going to put
7.
Put my answer sheet in the bin now.
Well done, Christopher.
Victory.
Christian. Sorry, Chris.
I don't care, I won. Victory. So now it is question time.
Question time.
Question time.
So.
Spain are 2-0 up against the Republic of Ireland.
I am aware.
Question time.
So Teflon says, do you reckon Amazon will really be shipping the Black Wii U for £199 on July 14th? Well, no, because Peter's already had his order cancelled.
Yeah.
Which is pretty...
The question is, do we really give a shit?
Yes.
Oh, I think it looks good.
I've not heard anything about it.
I want Rayman Legends.
I want an alien game with that screen being the motion scanner.
Which is probably coming, but they won't confirm it.
Yeah.
And I got... that was... I tried to talk about that because the thing went up last week. That was the game where I said that I wasn't had to ask about the Wii U, otherwise I'd get pounced on by PR. Really aren't talking about the Wii U stuff. And I assume they weren't talking about the Wii U stuff because they were going to talk about it at E3, you know, and just be like, yeah, here's kind of shit, and here's like, we're not talking about it here, because here is all the stuff about E3, and look, this is an awesome use, and look at it in the press conference, and then that didn't happen. So yeah, that was surprising. I kind of figured that it was a lock to be in the press conference, but no, apparently not.
Apparently not.
Yeah, Wii U looks good to me. I'm quite interested in it. I'm definitely not interested in Nintendo Land, like even a tiny bit.
Yeah, people have said that that's actually not as bad as it looks. A lot of people have said. Having played it at E3, have said that actually it plays quite fun.
Well, you see, after having it so thoroughly explained to me in the Nintendo press conference, I just don't feel like I need to play it anymore. I think they've just covered all the ground for me. You could probably review it from the fucking demo they gave it.
Probably. IGN probably will.
Yeah. Then we have three tweets from Chris Clark. The first being rape cells. These aren't questions, they're just things.
I think they're discussion points.
Rape cells. This is something that's been irritating.
That excuse doesn't hold up in court, though.
This is something that's been irritating me. Although Crystal Dynamics have now come out and said, no, we're not going to rape Lara Croft in this. It kind of irritates me that we're in this industry that wants to see itself as mature, but anytime someone tries to bring up a mature topic, it's instantly said, oh, you can't talk about that, you can't cover rape in a game. And I certainly wouldn't want them to cover rape distastefully. I think that'd be a horrible thing to do. It would be if they covered sexual abuse of any way in a distasteful manner, they'd get fucking crucified for it. But if they wanted to cover rape in an impactful manner that had a genuine impact on the character and pushed the game forwards and really grabbed you and perhaps even highlighted the problems of rape in our society and things like the victim complex and those kind of things, then why not include it? Why not discuss it? We have no idea. If it had been included, we've got no idea how Crystal Dynamics were going to include it in the game.
See, the thing is, right, rape has never been mentioned or hinted at. What they said was that there was an attempted rape.
Yeah.
And in the demos that they've shown and the video footage that they've shown of that new Tomb Raider game, Lara Croft is sexually assaulted.
Yeah.
Now, they have implied, and I think maybe even explicitly stated, that that's part of her character progression. She's backed into a corner and she's put under this pressure and basically she's scared. And that's what turns her into a killer.
Yeah.
That's the first time she kills a person, is because that's happening and it scares her. Mm. I think that's incredibly interesting. I don't think that's a topic that we should shy away from as an industry, and I don't think that it's a topic that we should keep out of video games because of certain nutcases sensitivities. Mm. I saw comments today, actually, there was somebody commented that there shouldn't be that sort of sexual assault or attempted rape scene in a video game because it's basically pornography.
No.
And I read that and was like, you are such a fucking idiot. Anybody that still thinks in this day and age that rape or sexual assault is about sex is an idiot.
Yeah, of course it's not. It's about power.
Yeah. So I think the bigger issue for me is the fact that this producer, who isn't a game developer and hasn't had any input in the creative development of this game, said that they were trying to make her appear vulnerable, and talked about the sexual assault being a base for her to sort of fight back from.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, that's questionable motives, and maybe they're not handling it as tastefully as they could. I don't personally don't think that we really know until we know a wider picture of it.
Yeah.
But for me, it's a bigger issue that now somebody has come out from Crystal Dynamics today saying that no, she's not sexually assaulted. She is sexually assaulted. Well, no, you see that in the videos.
Yeah, they say sexual assault is something we're categorically not covering in this game.
Yeah.
Whereas I think the phrasing they should have said is rape is something we categorically don't cover in this game. Which
see, this
be
is
fine.
The thing that people don't seem to be drawing a differentiation. There is a difference between sexual assault and rape.
Yeah. Definitely.
So, yeah. But, yeah, there's been a whole big fuss about it, and they've got so many column inches, and there's been days and days now of people complaining about it, and I have largely just tried to ignore it and let them all get on with things.
It just seems silly.
We just don't know.
I don't want to prejudge the product. If they bought out a video that had shown her like actually getting raped and then somehow completely trivialized it, that would be an issue. But an off the cuff comment by a producer, which hasn't been shown on video, doesn't seem to have been shown in any demos significantly.
And comes from an interview which was horrendously written, terribly conducted, and picked to pieces. They actually misquote from news stories that were pulled out days before that interview was published by Kotaku. Brian Crescente.
Yeah.
He's not at Kotaku anymore, although he may as fucking well be at Polygon.
Oh, there's also, but part of the stories who came from Kotaku, from what I understand.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But it's just bad.
It's just a terrible piece of work. And I think that, not immediately, but I think that in a few months or a year's time, I think Crescente will realise that that was not his best work and will back down from all the defending that he's done.
Yeah. And
there's lots of other stuff going on in Get. Like, you didn't hear anyone complaining that children were being killed in Heavy Rain or anything like that. It's not like other games aren't tackling equally sensitive subjects.
Yeah, I've seen people today say, can you imagine if you played as a male character in a video game? There's no way anybody would ever instigate an attempted rape scene in that. And I saw that and thought, well, yeah, Mafia 2, there's an attempted rape scene.
Hmm.
And you're a male character and you're in prison and they attempt to rape you.
Hmm.
And I don't remember all this whole furore over that, but...
yeah.
I don't know. I think it's all tied in. I think it comes off the back of the whole gender issue debate that we got from that Hitman trailer and then the whole Booth Babes thing from E3 that we had. Yeah. And it just seems like we've spent the past 3 weeks now complaining about gender issues in video games instead of just enjoying video games. And I don't think that it's a problem in video games or the video game industry that's any larger than the problem which is in society in general. And I think that our constant whining and bleating about it just shows how we're not ready for it to be a mature medium yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, people in our position spend a lot of time trying to get recognized on an equal footing with movies and books and like TV shows and all that sort of stuff. And then something like this happens and we show that we're not ready to debate on those terms yet.
Yeah.
It's embarrassing. But it's embarrassing. The discussion around it is embarrassing rather than what the actual thing that we're discussing.
It's the fact that we seem to constantly try and have debates without any context because we're on this news cycle and people need stuff to talk about and
yep
which
I just keep it spinning round and round, and it's the same discussion we're having, the same discussion about this Lara Croft stuff as we had about those nuns in the Hitman trailer. It's just slightly different phrases, slightly different situations, but it's the same thing.
And I also think the nuns in the Hitman trailer we had, there was more validity to some of the arguments around that than there were around this.
Some of the arguments, yeah, because it related to the game.
Yeah.
There was arguments that it was misrepresenting what that game was.
Yeah. I also sort of, I I sort of bought the arguments that that it was sort of sexualizing violence towards women. I was like, it's in some ways it is covering that ground, and it was a weird trailer in a way.
See, I think it was a weird trailer anyway. I don't think it sexualized violence towards anybody. I don't think there was anything in that trailer that was sexy.
Oh no, I don't personally think it was, but I can certainly see that as a valid interpretation of that trailer. But I can also just see I didn't get any of the arguments about why it was wrong for him to be violent against women because the women were being violent against him. I was like, well, that's not really an issue because they're trying to blow him up. So
yeah.
But I could sort of understand some of the arguments of saying, hey, why do they have to be like skimpily dressed to do this? Yeah, it's a general issue in game, not just in games, in media in general. And
yeah,
and that was something I can sort of buy. But it was, I also felt that trailer specifically didn't feel like a big deal as some people made it out to be.
Do you know what annoyed me the most about that whole situation was that I saw two or three female writers who were writing, because obviously we are that foolish in this industry that when anything like that comes up, the big outlets rush to the one female writer they have on staff, yeah, and get her to talk about it, which, like, that's not ironic at all. So I saw, I think, two different female writers saying that this was terrible to objectify women like that. And then in the same piece, maybe only a paragraph later, they discounted those women because of the choices of clothing that they'd made as being sexually promiscuous. So it's terrible to use women in this situation, because look at them all, they're dressed like sluts. And that is utterly ridiculous. That's like, yeah, you go, sister. They're dressed like sluts. They're wearing what they want to wear.
Mm.
Or they're wearing, you know, one of them said that they had stripper shoes. My wife's got shoes like that, and I fucking wish she'd do a bit of stripping.
I assume you mean paint stripping or stripping the wallpaper.
Yeah, just, yeah, a bit of redecoration needed around here. That's all, obviously.
Just looking a bit shabby, really.
Yeah. But yeah, my wife has shoes like that with crazy heels on and weird shiny bits because she likes those shoes. So she has some weird shoes like that. And yes, I do take the piss out of her. I know her well enough to be able to do that. But the one female writer that writes for whatever outlet she was writing for, saying that now apparently that makes my wife look slutty because she made that choice to wear shoes that look like that, is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And the wider issue I have with this is that we can't really, as men, take exception to it. You know, I can't go to that article and leave a comment in the comments saying, basically, you're being a fucking idiot. Because the first thing that you get back from that is, no, you don't understand, you're a man.
Yeah.
And that's a ridiculous viewpoint. It's like me saying, yeah, well, you don't understand car mechanics because you're a woman. It's exactly the same thing.
Mm.
You know, if we can't sympathize with each other through whatever sexual orientation or gender or religious choice or, I don't know, personal decision, then we're not really human anymore. We've been doing that since before we became recognizably human.
Yeah, I think part of the issue is, though, that you get that backlash instantly because there's a lot of people who actually don't understand the points they're making, and so it just becomes this instant defensive response, which I can understand why.
The comments on those things and comments on subsequent sort of feminist issue video game things that have been floating around, like there's a Kickstarter for a woman to do like a documentary about sexism in video games. The comments that appear on these things from, I assume, men, or I hope, very young boys that haven't quite grown up enough yet, are fucking disgraceful. But they also perfectly illustrate why those nuns were dressed like that. Because that's what appeals to the people that are going to buy that game.
Yeah.
And we are in a unfortunate, tragic minority in that we don't think that that's a great way to sell that game.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
I think the whole sexism in video games is ridiculous, really, because, yes, like, for the majority, the women are presented as, you know, a bit of eye candy and what have you, but the point to a video game is to engage in a story that is the same as films. It's got to be thrilling and what have you. Films, obviously, not so much because you can do different stories with that because you don't have to build the game around it. But you've got most, if not all, of the male characters in all of these games aren't realistic males either.
Yeah, that's why Nathan Drake looks like Nathan Drake and doesn't look like fat Nathan Drake that they released for a joke for a multiplayer skin.
And no one can do the feats of athleticism that he does. And in all the war games, all of the soldiers are you know a typical testosterone fueled man. And you look through, and it's not through sexism as probably as much as it is. That's just how an interactive thing is going to progress.
Well, it's a visual aesthetic.
No one's going to play it if it's a, you know, no one's going to sit there and play an accounting game.
No.
You know, got to walk through the office and bump into regular people. Because it just doesn't make for a fun experience. And so it's not a sexism. It's just a case of basically making it as entertaining as possible.
It would be interesting if there were some sort of non-scantily clad ladies included as secondary characters or something, at least occasionally, which doesn't seem to crop up that often.
Yeah, but the whole scantily clad argument I don't understand, because it's not the clothes they wear that define them. There are plenty of games out there like Heavenly Sword and Enslaved that have strong, likeable, fit like female leads, and who cares what they're wearing? Yes, of course they're being dressed up to make them more appealing, but it's not sexism as such. That's again just to make it more enjoyable. The characters themselves have enough depth and weight to them that they're enjoyable to play, and you don't, you know, it's not like people, oh, I'm not playing that game, you know, I'm a girl, sort of thing.
I think, yeah, it's certainly in you can pick examples of games that have strong female characters, and they probably are dressed in what's assumed to be a tantalizing way, and that probably is unnecessary to a large degree, but those are sort of style issues, they're aesthetic issues.
Yeah, they're not sexism issues. Obviously things like Dead or Alive, that could be a different argument,
but it's, I mean, you mentioned Enslaved, the male character in Enslaved wears far less clothes, far fewer clothes than the female character.
Yeah.
You know, that guy has almost shown his cock. His trousers are so low cut. And nobody points at that. Nobody, you know, that's not an issue. And, you know, fair enough, that's not such an issue in wider society. And I think that's the real core of the problem that I have with it, is that people are talking about it like it's a problem with video games.
Yeah, and same with violence.
And it's not. It's a problem with society.
Yeah.
But focusing on video games, it's understandable because that's what we all understand and that's what surrounds us most of the time in what we do. But focusing on it as a problem within video games, I think both amplifies the issue within video games more than it really needs to be. It gives the people that put these trailers and marketing campaigns together justification for what they've done. Because it works, they get so much free publicity out of it. And it also diverts the debate and the focus away from the wider issue.
Yeah.
People think, oh yeah, that's, you know, sexual objectification of women, that's a video game problem. Or ultra violence, that's a video game problem.
Yeah.
And it's not. It's in movies, it's in books, it's in it's in real life. You see more dead bodies on the news than you see on TV.
Yeah.
And on the news, they're real dead bodies. They're not just people covered in ketchup.
Yeah.
So I think it's all a bit of a smokescreen. And we all engage in it and go round and round with the same arguments. And meanwhile, the wider world looks in on us and thinks that we're obsessed with ourselves and obsessed with these sort of small technicalities and not looking out, not looking to grow.
Yeah. The other part of the problem in sort of the other direction as well is no one ever picked, well, it seems very rare that anyone picks up on positive sort of females in games. You rarely see anyone praising like a strong female character who wasn't dressed ridiculously. Like in games where it is a strong character, it sort of doesn't come up so much. Like Bayonetta, for example, all the focus on that was the fact that she had some weird moves where occasionally all her clothes came off. But for the most part, she wasn't dressed in nothing. If I recall, she's kind of dressed in quite a long dress for a lot of it, isn't she?
Yeah, or like skin tight catsuit bits, but it's her hair that makes her clothes. Yeah. Them.
But
there are strong female characters in video games.
But no one ever seems to. We never praise anyone when they get it right. We only like attack people when they're doing things that are perceived.
Oh, yeah, it's the same with everything, though, isn't it?
Yeah, no, certainly. But I think if we were more keen to praise people who are getting who are presenting sort of more balanced views on women and that kind of thing, it would be interesting.
And even those that aren't praised, like the female characters in the Uncharted games.
Hmm. I was going to say, Uncharted, you got Helena and Chloe that are two different types of characters. Chloe's the more sort of out there female, while Helena's the sort of girl next door type.
Yeah, and I think that those are well characterized, well written female roles. But how many times in that game does the camera swing around behind their ass and they're wearing skin tight jeans?
Yeah. But then again, I think with Chloe, that was her character, wasn't it? She used her sexuality and that to her advantage. They didn't do that as much with Eleanor because that wasn't her character.
Yeah. And there's...
So again, I don't think it's sexist. Again, it's just going to go around in circles, but I don't think it's sexism. It is just a building of character.
Yeah, and
much like films do. Films do the same thing, different camera techniques and camera tricks to sort of give more depth to the character.
And there's no reason to say why those sort of, I don't know, maybe character flaws is the wrong term, but those sort of quirks, that way of characterizing women, isn't necessarily a bad thing. It depends on how it's done and on the character of the woman. And the important thing to remember is that these women are fictional characters.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not like they really beat up a group of women dressed as nuns in that Hitman video. You know, they are fictional characters. And the important thing, I think, is to make that clear to the people that play video games. You know, all the people that watch movies, all the people that read books, these are fictional characters. These things are done to progress a plot in a quick and relatively easy way. That's not necessarily how people behave in real life. And I think that's the case for, you know, all of this to varying degrees. I think that certainly it could be handled better by, well, not even by developers, but by the PR people and the people that do that. But I think that we make far too big a deal out of it when, without really understanding the rest of it. And that's a shame. I think there is a wider debate to be had, and we're not having that debate.
True dat.
So there we go. Shall we move on now? We've ranted for like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I've been really trying to stay out of that debate as well because it's just so utterly pointless.
I just do one more talking point and then we'll wrap up, I think. Again, from Chris Clark, he says, Warren Spector says the ultraviolence must stop, which is something I talked about at E3 with the Sony show. Was that the level of violence in the Last of Us trailer and the God of War Ascension trailer made me feel uncomfortable. Definitely in God of War, in some ways more so because it was very intense, but in other ways less so because it's clearly fantasy violence. Whereas it, like, he's cutting the head off an elephant god guy, like that's obviously fantasy violence. But it was still ridiculously visceral. And then in The Last of Us, where the main character is smacking a guy's head against the table, like leaving a bloody smear on the table for what seemed like 5 minutes, just standing there pounding this guy's head into a table. Again, seemed unnecessary in some ways. And perhaps, as someone argued to me, perhaps some of it is a sign of the industry maturing in some ways. Not so much the God of War aspect, but the Last of Us aspect, where it's rather than you're seeing stuff like in Assassin's Creed, where it's stab, 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 and then the guy just ragdolls to the floor with no other real effects. Whereas this is actually showing you the consequence of your action, which I can certainly see that argument in some ways. But on the other hand, that argument certainly doesn't apply to God of War.
Yeah, see, I'd have to say that things like Grand Theft Auto, that type of violence unsettles me more than God of War and The Last of Us, because that it's done with such a light-hearted throwaway attitude that it does seem quite insensitive. But God of War is ultra violent, but I think that is stylized fantasy, like you say, and that is what the series is based on. It's being true to itself, and it's set in that world, and everyone knows that's what's God of War. If they toned it down, everyone would be in uproar that it's no longer God of War.
I'm not so saying they should tone it. It was specific example. He is kind of like chopping the guy's head off for like 2 minutes,
yeah,
and there's a hell of a lot of blood pooling.
Yeah, there is. I agree with you there, but like I said, I think that's just because that's the game it is, and that's the game it's become. And with The Last of Us, I loved that trailer because I thought it had a real sense of identity to it. Almost, you know, these people are among the last on the planet, and they're struggling to survive. So it would be a brutal experience. You would be doing anything you can to survive, which when you come up to conflict would mean using anything and everything in order to sort of overpower the people. I understand what you're saying in terms of it's probably a bit excessive the amount of time it was done for, but it gives the whole thing an identity.
I think it's a similar situation with the gender issue, is in that we don't really know the context of it so much. So it's hard to judge whether or not that's acceptable or not. I think they focused maybe too much on it for the short periods of gameplay that they showed us.
What's interesting as well is I've heard that you can go for that encounter without fighting anyone if you want to. But they chose not to show that, which I thought was an odd choice.
Yeah. And
but again, I think for demos that if they, you know, they're trying to show the game off in an exciting way in order to sell, and I don't think if they'd chosen the stealthy way or the quiet way, and the same with God of War, if they'd shown off a puzzle which had no combat, it probably wouldn't have had an impact. And Sony, at the moment they need to go in full impact in order to sell the games eventually when they come out, and I think people will appreciate the games for their subtle moments as well. I think it's just for the mass audience they need to show off its most sort of brutal and exciting.
I can tell you about the God of War, but with The Last of Us, it in some ways as well just left me feeling like, oh, well, they've done this again. Like, it rather than getting the feeling this is like a unique, interesting, exciting game, it's just like, oh, it's another game where you punch people and slam their heads into tables. Whereas if they'd gone like the interesting stealth section, or
but that's what I'm saying. If you say that there are loads of people out there that aren't part of communities like TSA and don't have that much knowledge of what the game is, they only get to see the big events. Well,
that's my point.
Media.
Is if you're only going to show them that, show them what makes your game different and interesting, rather than showing them what makes your game the same as every other game. If you think all they're going to see is the E3 trailer, yeah, it's easy to sell the action, but you're also just going, hey, we made another action game, people are like, oh, it looks great, but also I've got all these other action games. Whereas if you show them, like, here is why our game is slightly different to these other action games, that's more interesting. That's what they did with the Watch Dogs trailer. Because
yeah, that would... They went, that would...
Sorry.
That would certainly be Shut more up. Interesting. but those other games that it looks like, they all sold millions of copies. You know, people know what those games are. That's why when they made the Ghost Recon TV advert, they made it look like it was Modern Warfare.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm saying. We know that Last of Us, for example, has that element of stealth to it and has that that subtle edge that we find appealing. But if you're just somebody that doesn't, you know, goes day to day not having any knowledge of the games industry or what's being said about games and only gets to see those big events, and you see that action section, your interests are piqued, and then if you want to find out more, you then slowly learn that you can go about it in other ways, and then if you want to play it that way, you can. If you want to go in for the action, you can also do that. So I can understand them showing the ultra-violent side in order to, like I said, go for full impact, and then from there, people can learn and discover that you can do it in different ways, and it can have a different emotional impact as well.
I think it was a wider problem, not that they showed that stuff. I can understand why they would show it, and I personally think it was maybe a little too graphic and they maybe focused on it too much, but I can understand why they would want that to be the thing that people see, because I mean, look at how much everybody's talking about it. But the wider problem, I think, is that when they showed it, the people in the room cheered it. They got a big round of applause, that's... which I think points to wider issues within this community.
Yes and no, because I also consider the fact that they, at all the conferences, they pad the rooms out with their own employees in a way. So you have to debate how much that was an issue, because how many of those people cheering were people who aren't actually employed by Sony. Like,
it was Kaz Hirai on the front row going mental.
Yeah. but like at the Microsoft press conference, like 343 got a cheer because there were 343 people in the audience. So
yeah. Yeah, that's
which is super weird. The developer that hasn't put anything out yet getting a cheer was kind of odd.
They put out that great trailer.
It's true. That is true. Was that what they were cheering? They were so impressed by the trailer that they had just had to.
Their CG is brilliant.
Yeah.
Next year they'll just come out and say the name of the city that they're in.
It's like Los Angeles.
Hey. Yeah, or whoever the high school football team is.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. That's two hot topics from the past week of video games that we've ranted on about.
Hot topics.
Do you like my people's Pringles modelled on an SAS balaclava?
Right, that'll do.
That'll do.
This was episode 66 of the Oscar Mike Media Podcast. I've been your host, Chris Luscombe. I was joined this week by Peter Chapman and Lewis Gaston, who you can get Peter at twitter.com/ColossalBlue. You get Lewis Gaston at twitter.com/LewisGaston. You get me at twitter.com/HowPro. Thank you all for listening. Say goodbye, everybody.
Ciao.
Bye.
Go Oklahoma.
Spain have beaten the Republic of Ireland 4-0.
That's not interesting because it's not basketball. This is basketball time.
Shooting hoops.
For like another week and a bit, it's basketball time and it can go to something else.
I'm off to squat up on curling.
Squat up?
And curl one out. Squat and curl.
Lovely.
That's what I'm...
Make sure you aim for the ice.